First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's Friday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. Second weekend of the Big Dance kicks off with a bang last night in Sin City and in the city that never sleeps, as Kansas State and Florida Atlantic are still dancing in the East region as they will play the regional final tomorrow in the late afternoon, early evening in Manhattan. And in America's Playground, Gonzaga wins a thriller over UCLA in the second of two games, and Connecticut just runs right through another opponent, this time the Arkansas Razorbacks, the victim for the Huskies. We're going to run through all of the games from last night, do a little previewing for what we have tonight as well. David Cobb from CBS Sports joins in about 25, 30 minutes. Jeremy Branham, the voice of the Houston Cougars, joins the show. Our good buddy jumps on here, I'll see. Belmer, what do we think? Do we think Jeremy violated the code of a native Texan and got some Kansas City barbecue?
Oh, I'm sure he did, yeah. And then I'm sure he was disappointed.
Disappointed, you know? Right. But see, if you're going to be disappointed, why order it?
Like, well, you gotta at least see the level
of your disappointment.
You gotta see what the lesser barbecue is to appreciate yours more sometimes.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I will ask him, because when I was driving down here from my last radio job in Minnesota, we're based in Houston, I stopped in Kansas City and got some barbecue, and I thought it was really good, but I had never had the Texas barbecue yet. So I do give Texas the edge, although the KC was good too. I've never had the Memphis barbecue. Those are the three areas of the country that I feel we really associate with barbecue. Texas, Kansas City, and Memphis, and probably the whole state of Tennessee for that matter. But Memphis seems to be the hotbed for barbecue in Tennessee. So certainly see if Jeremy got some burnt ends, I think they call them up there. They don't call them that down here, right?
Yeah, I think they do.
They
as
do?
Well. Yeah,
okay.
I've seen it. Yeah.
All right, I thought it was more of a Kansas City thing. But we'll talk to him in about an hour and a half to preview UH and Miami tonight. I think the better games are in that Midwest region with Houston and Miami, and then Xavier in Texas, certainly in the South. I do give San Diego State a puncher's chance against Alabama. I don't really know about Creighton and Princeton. That's one of those games where you just look up and say, that first weekend was fun, and that Princeton story was cute, and then, now they're playing Creighton? So those are the four games on the docket for tonight. But, gosh, Gonzaga and UCLA, that's where I want to start. And maybe Michigan State and Kansas State was a better basketball game. But the Zags show an amazing display of resiliency again. They did this in the previous round against TCU. Last season in the round of 32 against Memphis, they're down by double digits at halftime. And they come back and win. And they're down by 13 last night at half. And it really looked like the defensive woes for Gonzaga, which had reared their ugly head at different times of the regular season and postseason for the Zags, it felt like they weren't going to be able to overcome those. And while UCLA was undermanned, Dembona didn't play last night, and David Singleton was playing through an injury, and we know Jalen Clark has been out for the Bruins, it just looked like Gonzaga was an inferior team. And it was for the first half. But Mark Few, for as great of a tactician as he is and a great X's and O's guy, and it's funny, our buddy Joel Blank told me, and I appreciated this. He said, he calls me G-Man, and he goes, G-Man, you get credit for pointing that out last night on Twitter before anybody else that was the play. at the when the Julian Strother hit the shot, that was the play that Chris Jenkins won the national championship on for Villanova in 2016. I did think I tweeted that before anybody else did, that I did start seeing it. Now, I'm not looking to, you know, claim that, but, Joel served it up for me on a silver platter. So for as good as Mark Few is from a X's and O's, schematics, draw things up, and find a way to beat you with, you know, utilizing his personnel to the best of his ability, I tell you, the guy sure seems like a damn good motivator, because Gonzaga comes out in the second half and they chip away, and they still believed, they flipped the switch ever so, you know, gradually. Because I'll be honest, I flipped over and was watching Florida Atlantic and Tennessee, you know, and then they got the score of the other game up on the screen, and you say, down Gonzaga got it down to 8. Gonzaga got it down to 6. Maybe we got a little bit of a ball game here. And Gonzaga just kept churning, kept going. And I will say there was an awful lot of cooperation on the UCLA end of things last night. 11 minutes without a field goal. That's more than half the half in which UCLA didn't make a field goal. And then having said that, the minute you thought that Gonzaga had the game in the bag, then UCLA forces a few turnovers, and, you know, Jaime Jaquez just says, hold on a second, you know, I'm going to bulldoze my way to the basket and, you know, gets an N1, couple quick buckets, and then the game, like, in the 11th hour, takes another twist. And UCLA ends up taking the lead again. And I'll be honest, as much as I like Mick Cronin, and Jaquez is a likable guy, and Tiger Campbell's fun, I was definitely behind Gonzaga, and will continue to be, because I want to see Mark Few get his, and we're going to be there at NRG Stadium next weekend for the Final Four. Mark Few has paid his dues. I'd like to see him win a national championship. And it felt like last night this was going to be another page in a long storybook of Gonzaga March disappointments. And it was going to be, gosh, you know, they made an awful nice rally in the second half against UCLA, but then they let their guard down, and another year in which Gonzaga can't get it done. And then, as I said, he calls the Jay Wright play, which is what Few said after the game. He said that it was the play that Villanova won the national championship on 7 years ago. And Julian Strother hits a shot from the logo. And even despite the fact that Gonzaga then took the lead, which ended up being for good, I thought Tiger Campbell got, all things considered, a pretty good look at the buzzer from just inside half court. I think when they inbounded to Campbell, he had a little over a second. And yeah, he hits the back of the rim, and Gonzaga survives. And I just think that they're easy to get behind, particularly this year. They were my pick, by the way. I thought that there was going to be some a little bit of maybe relief, whatever the term is, where we didn't come in looking at the Zags saying, well, they got to do it this year, right? They didn't have a Chet Holmgren. They didn't have a Jalen Suggs, where all the kind of NBA fans that were watching college hoops are looking at the draft prospects in the tournament. Like, they didn't have one of those guys. They were a little spotty at times in the WCC regular season. They lost, I believe, to Loyola Marymount. I know they lost their regular season game to St. Mary's. And so from November to February-ish, it was kind of like, they're good, but this doesn't feel like as talented of a team as they've had in years past. And it's not as talented of a team as they've had in years past up there in Spokane, but they are playing together, and they found a kind of a next groove, another level that they haven't gotten to in the regular season, and they've found that level here in March. Perfect time to be doing it. And Drew Timmy, I talked about Strother and Mark Few and Gonzaga, you know, collectively being able to kind of mentally battle through some of its slow starts. Drew Timmy is having a Tyler Hansborough-esque career at Gonzaga. He finishes last night with 36 points, 13 rebounds. He hit the 1-3 he threw up. He adds 4 assists as well. And by the way, Strother had 10 rebounds, which is pretty damn good for a guard. But Timmy is this is a special, special career that he has put together for Gonzaga. And, you know, as much as I'd like to see few get it, if there's ever been a Gonzaga player, you know, Timmy, by the way, is the all-time leading scorer in the program now. So if there's ever been a player for Gonzaga who deserved his career to end this way, and they've had some real good ones, but Timmy might be at the top of the list as Gonzaga is 3 wins away from a national championship. And again, UCLA, credit to them for how well the Bruins played in the first half. And you know, to get back there at the end, Jaquez with a couple of big-time drives. Amari Bailey hits the big 3 to put UCLA ahead. It was an excellent, excellent college basketball game last night in Vegas. And it should set up. We're going to obviously get to UConn a little bit later on, but it should set up for a juicy regional final. Because here's the thing. Everyone talks about guards in March. Well, how about Drew Timmy, the big guy for Gonzaga, against Adama Sanogo tomorrow night, the big guy for Connecticut. Looking forward to watching that. Looking forward to just watching this game because Gonzaga, again, there's a moxie, there's a swagger, there's a confidence that the Bulldogs are playing with right now where they're just going to find a way to win regardless. And UConn's just eating everybody's souls and just killing everybody. So the West Regional Final should be great. Let's go to the East where Kansas State is still dancing. Marquise Noel and company put on a show last night at the Garden. We'll discuss First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
We're taking you through the brackets on the Sports Map Radio Network, presented by BlueChew.com. Guys, it's all about confidence, and confidence is what you get with the chewables from BlueChew.com. BlueChew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form at a fraction of the cost. And for Sports Map Radio listeners, try BlueChew free when you use our promo code MADNESS at checkout. That's BlueChew.com, promo code MADNESS, to receive your first month free. Now, back to the show.
On we roll on a Friday afternoon, launching you into your weekends here on the Sports Map Radio Network. And all of our tournament coverage is brought to you by our good friends at Blue Chew. You heard the man say it. Guys, it's all about confidence. Confidence knowing you'll be ready to go when your partner is. And confidence knowing you'll be able to go a few extra rounds when needed. Confidence is what you need with the chewables from BlueChew.com. And now they also have Verdanafil mint-flavored chewables with the active ingredient in Levitra and Saxin so you can stay fresh. Blue Chew's tablets are a performance enhancement for the bedroom and can help men gain extra confidence when it's time to perform. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code MADNESS at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code MADNESS, to receive your first month free.
Here's Hauser, gives it up. Clock ticks. Ball. Finding Walker. Walker, and he's stripped by Noel. Ball is loose. Noel comes out of the pack. Noel dribbles, and he lays it in. Count the basket, and Kansas State wins it. The Wildcats are headed for the Elite Eight. What a game.
There's Brian Anderson on TBS last night in what might have been, probably was, I don't know. I go back and forth on if Michigan State, Kansas State, or UCLA or Gonzaga was the better game last night. But those were the two best games of the tournament as the Kansas State Wildcats emerge victorious over the Michigan State Spartans. And it's been one hell of a story in Manhattan, Kansas, that is. They were in Manhattan, New York last night, but Manhattan, Kansas, where the Kansas State University campus is, and they were picked last in the Big 12. Jerome Tang taking over there after 2 decades on the Baylor staff with Scott Drew, won a national championship in 2021. And Kansas State's still playing. We talked a lot about it yesterday with Blair Kirchhoff from the Kansas City Star about their belief in themselves and how they've been able to ignite not just a run this season, but an entire, you know, 4 or 5 months. You know, this isn't just Kansas State catching hot at the right time. Kansas State was a 3 seed in this tournament. And Blair mentioned it. They won a couple conference games. I think he said Baylor and Kansas, where you watched them do those, pick up those conference wins in January and thought, hey, there might be something here. Like, this is a quicker turnaround than even the optimist of optimists might have thought surrounding the Kansas State program. And Marquise Noel has really become a darling of this tournament. It's funny, Cal in the last round called him the little guy and kind of had to apologize for that. But there is a, like, kind of an underdog like element to this kid that I think a lot of people can take to. About, you know, he's kind of undersized. He's not like a high-level NBA prospect, but so entertaining out there. And I'll tell you, a guard that can kind of pull a rabbit out of a hat in the middle of a possession and see the floor well enough and have good chemistry with the other 4 guys on the court to kind of have different guys make cuts or back cuts and out of thin air, oh, there's a easy 2 points, and it just the play kind of pops up out of nowhere and you get an easy bucket. Like, that's really fun to watch. And, you know, that's why I've always enjoyed the career of Chris Paul in the NBA, because the ability that he has to kind of navigate around the court and find different players, you know, kind of pass them open almost, where he just kind of looks up, communicates with somebody on the court to make a cut, and the next thing you know, it's an easy 2 points. And he always kind of, the pass is always on the money. And we had that last night with Marquise Noel and Keontae Johnson. It was a clip that was going around where Noel's arguing with Jerome Tang. And a lot of people thought, myself included, that it might have been a design play in the final minute of overtime. I believe it was a tie game when they ran this play with air quotes around play. And as I said, Noel's got the ball right around midcourt and he's looking at Tang, and, you know, they're kind of signaling different things. It seems like they're arguing. And then the next thing you know, Keontae Johnson makes a cut along the baseline towards the rim, and Noel throws him a lob from just inside half court, and Johnson dunks the ball. And here's what Noel said about if the play was designed.
I mean, it was just a basketball play between me and Keontae. We knew how Michigan State, you know, plays defense. They play high up. And Keontae just told me, like, we got eye contact, and he was like, lob, lob. And, you know, I just threw it up, and he made a great play.
So, yeah, I mean, Noel had previously taken some ill-advised shots where he was taking, you know, threes from probably deeper than Julian Strother's shot last night in Vegas. And, you know, while none of them went in for Noel, I think there was, when he's talking about the defense for Michigan State, kind of playing high up and, you know, honoring the 3-point shot, not just the Noel, but, you know, the can't remember the kid's name that hit the baseline jumper off the inbound pass. But they had a couple guys that were stretching the defense out, and they took advantage of that. So Noel's telling you there that they weren't trying to do it. And that, it, you know, they were just taking advantage of what the defense was giving them. But then Isaiah Thomas was in the crowd, and there were some other celebrities, you know, more on the Michigan State side of the equation last night at the Garden. But he's, like, looking at them in the stands, and some cameras caught him saying to them, with 1 minute left in overtime of the Sweet 16, watch this. And here's what Noel said about that exchange with some of the celebrities in the, you know, first, second row that, you know, he had eye contact on, he spoke to if he actually said that last night.
A couple of people said before the alley-oop to Keontae, you looked at the crowd and said, watch this. Can you confirm or deny that?
Dang, I got to watch what I say. I mean, I'll be in the zone. Yeah, I was talking to Isaiah Thomas because I think he had a friend over there. And he was rooting for them, and I'm like, y'all not going to win today. And I just kept looking at him for some, you know, added motivation. But, you know, it was nothing but cool vibes with them over there.
You know, I am 28 years old, so I was not alive for the – like, I guess I would have been alive when they – did they play in 95? Belmer, have you seen the Pacers-Knicks winning time ESPN documentary about Reggie Miller and Spike Lee? They played in, I think, two or three postseasons. And I think it was maybe 93, 94, 95, but I was born in December of 94. And that documentary does illustrate, it was almost like the biggest rival for Reggie Miller was Spike Lee sitting in the first row. Now, this wasn't quite that. And, you know, it sounds like it was more friendly banter with Marquise Noel and Isaiah Thomas and whatever else might have been going on last night. But it does add another layer of fun to this when, in the guts of the game, in the big stages, a player is almost enjoying the trash talk element that sports bring in. That's a thing. Like, I've always been one to think that trash talk is a part of sports. And you hear about all these NBA players are like, oh, the fans said this and that. It's just like, shut up. Like, I'm not going to throw anything. Like, there's clearly a line here. But when it comes to the trash talk, like, that's a part of the game. So don't tell me that, oh, like, you shouldn't say this, you shouldn't say that. You know, it's all, you know, for most of it at least. You know, certainly there are some things you shouldn't say. But most of what's said, I believe, you know, that your average sports fan that wants to go to a game, have a good time, and talk some smack is going to do that. And if the players are going to kind of lean into that, and in this case, like Marquise Noel, in the final minute of the overtime, use it as additional motivation, that makes for another kind of fun plot line. So good for the Kansas State Wildcats. Tom Izzo mentioned it. He didn't think Michigan State was at its best last night. And the Spartans still almost pulled it out. So on one hand, that probably hurts even more if you're Sparty, because you think to yourself, well, we had probably our B game and we, you know, nearly beat the 3 seed in the bracket. But Kansas State won it. Noel made a bunch of plays down the stretch. And yeah, Joey Hauser in the final possession before Noel laid the ball in to win it by 5 for Kansas State. Hauser had a good look for 3 to tie the game and passed it up. He probably needs to shoot the ball. But it is what it is. And Kansas State is well deserving of its spot in the Elite Eight. David Cobb is up next, CBS Sports college basketball writer, as we'll go around the country with David on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
Got your tournament coverage right here on the Sports Map Radio Network, presented by HelloFresh. This spring, HelloFresh is delivering great tasting recipes that help you stick to your food goals, like new dietitian win options that are under 700 calories. Go to HelloFresh.com/hoops60 and use promo code HOOPS60 to get 60% off plus free shipping. HelloFresh.com/hoops60 and use promo code HOOPS60. Now, back to the show.
All right, as we continue on here on a Friday afternoon, as you heard the man say, our tournament coverage and guest spots are brought to you by HelloFresh. This spring, HelloFresh is delivering great-tasting recipes that help you stick to your food goals, like new dietitian win options that are under 700 calories. Go to HelloFresh.com/hoops60, code HOOPS60, to get 60% off plus free shipping. We bring on now David Cobb from CBS Sports, kind enough to join us to talk more March Madness. David, thanks a lot for your time. How you doing?
Hey, doing well. How are you guys?
Doing pretty well. We just finished talking about Kansas State's win last night at the Garden. And, you know, whether you think Kansas State, Michigan State, or Gonzaga, UCLA was a better game, you know, that's kind of six of one, half a dozen of another. But when you look at what Kansas State has been able to accomplish this year and how quickly the Wildcats have turned things around, picked to finish last in the Big 12, how much of a blueprint can this be for other teams, you know, Power 5 teams that say if you get the right guy in there and you think about it, Jerome Tang sat around a while at Baylor kind of waiting for the right job and ended up getting the K-State job. If you get the right guy in there, you can turn it around fast, right?
Yeah, you can turn it around fast in the transfer portal era. Keontae Johnson for Kansas State has been such a difference maker, and they did not add him to the roster until August. Classes may have already started by the time he committed to Kansas State. It was so late in the game. But give a ton of credit to Jerome Tang for, in year one as a head coach, getting this thing flipped so quickly. And this is going to do nothing to ease the patience of other fan bases around the country. Mm. And in some ways, I'm sure there are other coaches around the country who are just dreading the expectations that they will now be saddled with because of how quickly Jerome Tang was able to get it turned around. But a pretty remarkable story for the Wildcats, and I think they summed it up perfectly on the TV broadcast last night when they said that not a single member of that Kansas State roster initially signed with K-State out of high school, and yet here they are playing their best basketball and headed to the Elite Eight.
How do you like their matchup against FAU? I mean, I think obviously Kansas State's going to go in a favorite, but FAU doesn't seem bothered by anything.
Yeah, exactly. They are no fluke. They're not cute. They're not Cinderella. FAU is really good. Flew under the radar this season in a Conference USA that actually turned out to be not so bad. Because if you go and look, UAB and North Texas met deep in IT runs.
Yep.
Still alive, actually, I think. Both of them. I'd have to double check that. I don't really pay attention to the NIT this time of year. But my point being, Conference USA was not bad relative to its historical standard. And FAU pretty much ran the league. So to see them having some success in the NCAA tournament isn't shocking. And it certainly helped them that they got an open path. They didn't have to deal with Purdue. They got to play Fairleigh Dickinson instead. And then instead of a hot Duke team, they ended up against a Tennessee team that really struggles to score. So FAU's had a nice path, but they're also very deserving of where they are. They aren't a flash in the pan or some team that just caught fire at the right time. In fact, they've actually been shooting the ball at a lower clip than they did for most of the season.
What happened to Tennessee last night? It just felt like, you know, and I'm sure Vols fans will say, and probably Texas fans will say, hey, seen that script before with Rick Barnes in March and unable to kind of adjust and figure things out, but they just weren't making shots.
Yeah, that's been the story for Tennessee all year. The offense has been pretty bad. The defense has been great, and the defense kind of let them down a little bit there in the second half. Florida Atlantic was able to start running, and they were able to start breaking down Tennessee's defense, getting into the lane, and then passing to open shooters. And that's not something that Tennessee's defense often allows you to do. So that was a bit of a surprise that the defense kind of wilted a little bit as well in the second half for Tennessee. But given where Tennessee was in February, they closed the season losing five of they were 5-7 over their last 12 games in the regular season. So for them to make the Sweet 16 with a victory over Duke, it felt like that was probably about the ceiling for a Rick Barnes coach team.
Okay, let's go to the West region and start with that UCLA-Gonzaga game. I mean, every time these two teams throw the ball up in the NCAA tournament, it seems to deliver some crazy moments. What can you say? The thing that really stands out to me, David, is the mental fortitude and the just kind of resiliency that Gonzaga has shown, not just this year, but in years past. They were down by 10 at halftime in the round of 32 last year against Memphis, down at half against TCU this year, down by 13 against UCLA last night. And, you know, Mark Few, his teams just kind of keep chipping away, and they never go away, do they?
Yeah, exactly. That game, I actually think the Kansas State-Michigan State game was a better game, but the ending of UCLA Gonzaga may have been the wildest. And honestly, I feel for both teams like they've got something to be proud of there. For Gonzaga, obviously they came out with a win, but to battle back from a 13-point halftime deficit to win against a really good team. That's incredible. And then for UCLA, they were without Jalen Clark, who's out for the year due to an Achilles injury. They're their best perimeter defender, their third leading scorer. You're already down Jalen Clark, and then you're without Adem Bona, who is their starting center and the guy who you would have put on Drew Timmy defensively.
Yeah.
For the fact that they were able to open up a 13-point lead, and then in the final minute, erase an 8-point deficit and take the lead with 14 seconds left, just a wild game. UCLA really impresses me under Mick Cronin. I know they haven't gotten to the finish line and hung a banner yet, but it just seems to me like he gets every ounce every year out of what he's got on the roster.
Sure.
And that's the way I feel about this year's UCLA team too, even though I know their fans are certainly disappointed right now.
Miami, Houston, Xavier, Texas, Creighton, Princeton, San Diego State, Alabama. What's your favorite game tonight?
Yeah, I think Houston, Miami could get pretty good. It's a contrast in styles, and we've seen Houston struggle in the first half of games at times this season. We saw them have to kind of come from behind some against some inferior opponents during AAC play, and we saw them trailing by 10. Against Auburn in the second round last week. So if you're a betting person, I would be considering the Miami first half money line there.
Okay.
The Canes are fast. They like to run. Their guards are difficult to handle. And Kelvin Sampson has proven to be an amazing halftime adjustment type of coach. So maybe the Cougars get it figured out over the long haul, but it's an oil and water type of game because Houston goes real, real slow and Miami likes to go fast. So I think it may take Houston a little while to get the game and the pace of the game under control and to their liking.
David, Xavier playing Texas, Creighton playing Princeton, and last night UConn continues to look. I think UConn has played the best out of any team in the tournament. So the Big East and the collective quality of play that we've seen out of the league, I don't really think it comes as a huge surprise. I think this has always been a pretty good league since it was reconfigured. And now I think since that reconfiguration in 2013, this is the best the Big East has been, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. In a year where the Big Ten has already been eliminated, the SEC is down to one team remaining, the Big 12's numbers dwindling fast. With K-State left as the only representative, it's the Big East that's standing atop the heap in terms of conference supremacy in college basketball right now. And I think the league is only going to improve from here. You've got Villanova, which was going through a transition year, and they weren't even in the picture. So as Kyle Neptune gets that program back up and running, and Rick Pitino, hello, he steps into St. John's, yes. And then, of course, there's nowhere for Georgetown to go but up. So, yeah, we're talking about a great season for the Big East and probably even bigger things on the horizon for that conference. And so huge opportunity tonight. If they can even advance one of these two teams on to the Elite Eight, it would really put a nice cap on a solid year for that conference.
That's a good point. All they need is one, and they got a quarter of the Elite Eight. So be really impressive. Last one, do you agree Connecticut has been the best team in this tournament?
Oh, man, yes. They've won all three of their games by double digits so far in the tournament. There's so many different ways they can beat you. You try and collapse in on Adama Sanogo, and then all of a sudden he kicks out to Newton and Hawkins and Calcaterra, and the list goes on. These guys can shoot it. So they're just so difficult to defend. And what impressed me the most last night was going into that game against Arkansas, you're a little worried that Arkansas wants to play fast. Arkansas thrives on forcing turnovers. Well, in that first half, UConn had 7'2" Donovan Klingon running the floor, running the break and finishing the oops and getting back in transition and blocking shots. It was like, they're like, okay, Arkansas, you guys want to run? Let's run. And to me, that just illustrates that UConn can play any type of way and find a way to beat you because they're just all around a really good team.
There he is, David Cobb from CBS Sports on the HelloFresh guest line to talk some March Madness Sweet 16 continuing tonight in Kansas City and Louisville. David, thanks a lot for your time. Enjoy the rest of the second weekend.
Hey, will do. Thanks.
All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. I'll react a little bit more to FAU's win over Tennessee as the Owls are still playing. That's next.
Taking continue through the brackets on the Sports Map Radio Network, presented by BlueChew.com. Guys, it's all about confidence, and confidence is what you get with the chewables from BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form at a fraction of the cost. And for Sports Map Radio listeners, try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code MADNESS at checkout. That's BlueChew.com, promo code MADNESS, to receive your first month free. Now, back to the show.
Okay, we are back here on a Friday afternoon talking plenty of March Madness as the second weekend well underway. Underway with a bang last night in Sin City and the city that never sleeps. Greg Frank back with you on a Friday. John Bellmer, our producer, on the other side of the glass. Our college basketball coverage is brought to you by Blue Chew. Guys, it is all about confidence. Confidence knowing you'll be ready to go when your partner is. And confidence knowing you'll be able to go a few extra rounds when needed. Confidence is what you get with the chewables from BlueChew.com. And now they also have Vardenafil mint-flavored chewables with the active ingredient in Levitra and Staxin, so you can stay fresh. The Blue Chew tablets are a performance enhancement for the bedroom and can help men gain extra confidence when it's time to perform. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use the promo code MADNESS at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code MADNESS, to receive your first month free.
But Brian and the Owls are the ones heading to the Elite Eight. That is the ball game. The Owls, alive and well, they win it 62-55, and Florida Atlantic is Elite Eight bound.
There's Brian Anderson again last night from MSG as Florida Atlantic punches its ticket to the Elite Eight. Tennessee sees its season end on Thursday evening, and Rick Barnes in March is talking about it with Sean Mapes, our resident UT alum here at the company, as his Longhorns got the Xavier Musketeers. I guess that is a debate, by the way, in the South. UT, is the real UT Tennessee or Texas? I always feel like it's Texas, but maybe that's just because I've lived here now for a year and a half. If I lived in Tennessee for a year and a half, I'd probably say, yeah, the real UT is Tennessee. What do you think, Bellman?
Okay, well, think back to your days in Philly or in Minnesota.
Yeah.
If somebody had asked you that, what's the real UT, what would you have said?
I don't know. I don't know that I didn't, you know, I don't, I just always just said Tennessee and Texas, you know, and never, what would I, probably Texas, I guess.
Probably. I mean, come on.
Yeah, everything's bigger in Texas,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, as we're back here again on a Friday afternoon, and so anyway, I was talking with Sean Mapes about Rick Barnes and how he's had these tournament gaffes before. And I will get to the players on the court for Tennessee because they were bad in the second half for damn sure. But Tennessee's up 33-26 with 16 and a half minutes left in regulation last night. With 7 minutes left in regulation, it's about 10 minutes later, Florida Atlantic's up 10. A 17-point swing in about 10 minutes. And all of a sudden, the Vols are playing catch-up, and they never caught up. And the Owls never looked back. And here's the other thing. Florida Atlantic didn't even shoot the ball that well. I think they were like 33% from three. So, Tennessee had the game. Like, if you told me the final score last night was going to be 62-55, I would say there's a much better chance of a Tennessee victory than a Florida Atlantic victory. Because that's the kind of game Tennessee plays. They'll play in the mud. They'll muck it up. They'll out-tough you. They'll be physical. Maybe the last man standing win, right? And they're up 27-22 at half. It's exactly the kind of game script you want if you're a Vols fan. And as I said, that lead stretches to seven with 16 and a half minutes remaining in regulation. And then Tennessee cannot hit the broadside of a barn. And for 10 minutes, much like UCLA last night. In the second halves, those two higher seeds, UCLA and Tennessee, just went ice cold. And it's not to take anything away from FAU, because those kids still had to hang in there when it looked like they were getting a little beat up early on in that game. But if you hold FAU to 29.6% from the three-point line, it's 8 for 27. The Owls went from three. They only shot 42% from the field. You should feel pretty good if you're Tennessee. And yet, Florida Atlantic wins, and it isn't even all that close down the stretch. Now, why is that? Because Tennessee not only had an extended period of a dry spell offensively, and again, I thought Barnes, I'm watching him, like, call timeout, do something, maybe try and substitute a little bit more. And that's the problem that I think has reared its ugly head for Rick Barnes a lot in the NCAA tournament, is that he is not able to make ample in-game adjustments in due time to recover in some of these dry spells, and they stretch out a little bit too long, and in a one-game elimination scenario, that can kill you. But also, they couldn't make anything. Like I said, the Vols could not hit the broadside of a barn last night. Why did they lose? Because they shot 33% from the field. And 58% from the free throw line. And 26% from the three-point line. You're not going to beat almost anybody in the NCAA tournament with those shooting numbers. And they're probably not going to beat a lot of teams in the SEC that didn't make the NCAA tournament with those kinds of percentages from the field, from the three-point line, from the free throw line. So, it just, the wheels fell off for Tennessee, and there was no mechanic at Madison Square Garden to put them back on last night. And again, credit to FAU, not only for hanging around when it looked like the game was more on Tennessee's game script, but also for capitalizing when Tennessee did go cold, because that is the thing that I like about FAU. When you look at the three wins that FAU has had now in this tournament, ironically, two of their schools have been Tennessee schools, in Memphis and Tennessee last night. But they don't really seem to get phased in the guts of the game. And they win by one against Memphis in the first round. And then the whole crowd in Columbus last weekend is rooting for Fairleigh Dickinson. And FAU gets off to a big lead. And then FDU kind of gets its teeth into the game, and it's right. You know, it went back and forth there for a while, and FAU just proved to outplay FDU down the stretch. And I thought that was obviously the case last night as well. So there's a level of a calming presence there and a level of comfort that the Florida Atlantic Owls exhibit, where they just keep going. And, you know, Nellie Davis is a veteran guard and someone that, you know, it certainly helps to have a guy that, you know, he's been with the program for a little bit and able to kind of be that calming presence on the court. And I think that emanates through with a lot of the FAU kids. And so I don't want to take anything away from them. But by that same token, gosh. And listen, I know what David Cobb said in the last segment about Tennessee, and to an extent he's right, in that the Vols were kind of leaking oil at times and in the regular season, and you know, then they end up getting up to the four line in the NCAA tournament, and they get to the second weekend. Now, having said that, this was an opportunity here. I mean, this region, I always deem one of the regions a drunk region, where I just think, you know, this could really get crazy. There could be a lot of chaos here. I don't think anybody really liked Purdue on the one line and Marquette as the two, with Shaka and his tournament woes in the past. Kansas State as the three with not a lot of tournament experience. You know, they're still playing. Good for them. But you kept looking down this bracket and thought, all right, Duke's the five, and Duke's playing well coming into the tournament, but, you know, November through February. Duke was pretty spotty. The Sixers, Kentucky, same thing. You know, they looked a little bit better late, but November through February, the Wildcats were disappointing. So there was an opportunity here for Tennessee. And I still think that's disappointing for the Vols and their fans. They should be disappointed. They let the game. They were 5.5-point favorite last night. They had the game on their terms, lower scoring, physical grudge match, and they just choked and couldn't make anything. And, you know, they would have been in the Elite Eight had they not done that last night. Speaking of the Elite Eight, the Connecticut Huskies are there. Connecticut has been the best team in this tournament. I'll explain why on the other side. First Name Sports.